The onus was always on Man City.
Thank you.
And for me, Pep got it wrong.
It's Barnes, beats his man, Harvey Barnes!
Getting him back is massive, because I think he is so good.
He is. His output is so unbelievable.
Yeah, so consistent. Got your manager saying...
Because I have seen him against Man City, and City was also lucky to win that game.
Mate, you were 1-0 up in the 96th minute. Is there a more one-player team in the Premier League right now than Chelsea and Cole Palmer?
Hello, guys. Welcome back to Board Draw. This is episode 91. And it was a fun-filled weekend of football. I mean, there was an abundance of goals. Pretty much every game had goals in it, apart from what was the marquee matchup of the weekend. And it's all your fault.
Yeah.
We saw Man City go up against Arsenal at the Etihad, expecting a spellbinding game.
Were we?
An absolute blockbuster for the title challenge. We wanted to see a team come out on top and really set their mark for who was going to win the Premier League. And it was so boring.
Or was it? So, the timeline was full of terrorist
Jesus
football.
Jesus Rose saw that game and cut.
You see all the memes about, like, Peter Drury. He had that Jesus has risen line locked up and then didn't even get to use it. Didn't even get to use it. But yeah, I'll pose you some questions that I've seen from the timeline then, and we can chat about the game briefly. Won't do too much because it was a bit of a stinker and we got better games to talk about. So I've seen people say Arsenal set up like a League Two team, a game against a depleted Man City back line. Is it an opportunity missed for Arsenal?
Well, yes, in a way, because you want to play Man City when they're missing Stones, when they're missing like half their players.
Kyle Walker, Edison, yeah.
But even still, they put out a really solid team. I mean, that back line was four centre-backs.
100%. And you've got £100 million Vardial coming
not,
in.
That's not like a poor player.
No.
Do you know what I mean? Even when they lost Ake early on and bought on Rico Lewis, I thought he had a good game.
Yeah, 100%.
And in front of them, they've got two whole midfielders in Kovacic and Rodri.
Yeah, so people say Rodri's the best midfielder in the world, so he can handle that by himself. Kovacic has done the rounds. I haven't been impressed with his time at City, but he's a well-rounded player.
His game yesterday was exactly what he wanted to do. Break up play when Arsenal got the ball, make sure that they didn't sort of generate any dangerous chances, which he did to a part, but... Yeah, I don't know. For me, I don't think it's an opportunity missed. I think if you offered it to Arsenal fans to go to the Etihad and come away with a point...
Snatch your armour.
Yeah.
We get battered on the regs. So to get a point in a game where... I'll give you another one then. Who had the onus to go win the game? Should Man City?
City needs to set a point here. I mean, they're already behind Arsenal in points. They're already behind Liverpool in points. And although we're saying Man City can then go on and win every game this season, they could win 10-0, 9-0, 51-0.
Chiefs.
And it won't mean anything if Arsenal and Liverpool go and win all their games.
100%.
So the onus was always on Man City.
Thank you.
And for me, Pep got it wrong.
Explain.
Well, we were unsure as to how Arsenal were going to come at this, whether they were going to try go to the Etihad and...
Go high and, press.
And high press, dominate the game.
Yeah.
We saw Jorginho in the midfield, so he was there to dictate the tempo. But they didn't really do that, did they? They sat back. It was a very... And Pep said this in
I'll hold my hands up. We sat back.
But that's fine. The game plan was there. It was so clear and obvious from the first 15
game
minutes...
Game is the game.
...that you were going to sit back, absorb pressure, and then try to hit him on the counter, which is a perfectly valid way of playing football.
100%.
And there were points in time where you dominated the ball for short periods of time, but it was mainly Man City.
And a thing that was posed against Arteta back in the day, not so much now, is that he only had a plan A.
Mm-hmm.
This shows that Arsenal have a plan B, and not only a plan B, but a plan B that works against the best team in the world.
100%. So for me, Pep got it wrong, because within the first 20 minutes when he realised that Arsenal was sitting deep, they were happy for you to have the ball in the middle of the park... I mean, Man City set up in sort of just before Arsenal's halfway line, and you had every centre back, all their players were in the Arsenal half.
Mm.
The issue is, when you play with such a high line, and you're playing against a low block, you are just condensing the space for you to play within.
Yeah.
And Man City have the players. They have the technical players to do it. Between Foden, between Kevin De Bruyne, Bernardo Silva. They've got three players there who are excellent at operating in small spaces.
Mm.
But when you have your back line step up so far, I saw Ruben Dias playing as like a left winger half the game.
Right. Yeah, no, I saw, yeah, right, yeah. Back. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and so he... You condense the space for you to work in.
Mm.
Maybe what they should have done was look to stretch the game out a little bit, maybe drop back, invite Arsenal to come and sort of press them a little bit. Make Arsenal think, oh, we can go back to playing our normal way of playing.
Mm.
You've got to sort of trick them into it, because Arsenal were then happy to sit back. If Arsenal were disciplined and would have sat back, Man City would have seen more of the ball and probably carved open more opportunities.
Would have unlocked Haaland, because Haaland struggled this game because our defensive line was deeper. He didn't have like room to operate and make those line-breaking runs. Mm-hmm. Because we sat back, so there was no room to make those runs. Also, Gabriel and Saliba just had him absolutely pocketed, was so physical with him. Saw post-game, the journo asked Saliba, what's the plan? One of you gets super tight to Haaland, and then the other one sweeps up behind. And it worked a treat. They were just so physical. He got absolutely nothing. And yeah. I think that comes with, like you said, Arsenal playing deeper. If Man City invited Arsenal on a bit more, Haaland would have had rooms to play those over-the-top balls and stuff like that. So
yeah, I 100% agree. And I think, looking back on it, Arsenal probably had the best opportunities. There was a couple of times where Gabriel Jesus nearly got on the end of it at the far post.
And, yeah, it was an opportunity near the end where Martinelli was broke through, and he should have squared it to Trossard. But yeah, I think Arsenal, like you said, we played for the counter and we had the better opportunities, and that, in my opinion, is a damning indictment on Man City, who had 71% possession, but I mean, had about the same XG as Arsenal.
You are the best defensive team in the league, maybe not the world.
100.
And I think you proved it. I mean, Man City struggled to carve open clear opportunities. You sat deep, and that midfield area was just congested, and it made for an ugly watch. It wasn't an exciting game. I mean, you think back to when Liverpool and City were going head to head for the titles. Some of those games were absolute barnstormers. But I think it's just, you've got two managers. Pep and Klopp are very different in how they set up their teams.
Agreed, yeah.
Arteta is a student of Pep. And you can see the way that Arsenal play, with the invert in fullbacks, with the high organised press, with how they like to sort of like draw the game into lulls in order to take up a gear when the opposition aren't expecting it. That's sort of, and we expected that to happen. You've got to meet your matching of styles here.
Both of them are of the kind of school of thought that, and I can't remember who said it, but they said that Pep Guardiola is the most defensive manager in world football, because
you can't concede when you have the ball.
He will just try and get the opposition to absolutely no opportunities whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And Arteta's the same. If you avert all the risk, most times you'll win.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're both of that kind of school of thought. And that leads to stalemates with, like you said, Klopp versus Pep Guardiola, different styles of play. So it leads to more exciting games. We'll end on this. What is happening to football? Because 8 centre-backs started this game. You got Man City, Ruben Dias, Akanji, Vardiol, and Ake. Arsenal, you got Ben White, Saliba, Gabriel, and Kivior. 8 centre-backs, a 0-0. What is happening to football? Has Pep Guardiola ruined football?
Oh, no. Football is like cyclical, yeah. We'll see the return of 2 up top at some point. We'll see the return of smaller, ticky-tacky football players. I mean, it comes and goes in, and we haven't been on the planet long enough to see full cycles, but you'll look back at the and obviously football's come a long way from the 50s and the 60s, but the ideas are still there. But yeah, it can be boring at times to watch it, but then again, we watch Man City sometimes and they play the most outrageous football. They've got the players on the pitch to do it, and maybe having 4 centre backs is the way of facilitating these forward players to play with a bit more freedom.
And a direct counter to that is our next game, because we're going to talk about Newcastle 4, West Ham 3. So
yeah.
Goals, 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 mate.
100%.
Is David Moyes and
Eddie
Howe.
The way, Man City, when was the last time they beat a top 5 in the Premier League?
Ooh.
I think 6 games this season against the top 5, and they've drawn 4 and lost 2.
And the most damning indictment is that they got 2 draws against Chelsea, and Chelsea stink.
I don't even think that's in the top 5.
Yeah,
oh yeah, but mate, it's so poor. Maybe they're the bottle job. Maybe they're the You
can't say
Foot
that.
Manager when it's like big game players.
Yeah.
I mean, they did just win the treble, so.
Yeah.
But still, yeah, I don't know. Anyway, yeah, let's move on to an actual exciting game. This was the return of the Premier League after a stinky, stinky international break.
Mm.
And it delivered. West Ham collapsing. Newcastle
collapsing. But collapsing. Then rising like Jesus.
Yeah, literally, it was nuts. So the game started off. Newcastle started well. Early penalty. Alexander Isak puts it to bed. He's excellent.
I want to talk about. Well, I might as well cover both penalties in this game because they were both Anthony Gordon winning the penalty. Is there a better player in the Premier League right now at getting his foot in the way in the box and winning pens?
Oh, he's got it down.
He's so good. And the first one, in my opinion, is a penalty.
Oh, that's what I wanted to talk about a little bit in the Man City game.
What was that?
Was the fact that even when Grealish came on, when Doku was on the pitch, Foden, Bernardo Silva, when Arsenal were sat deep in their box, yeah, not one of them went and had a run at the defenders.
No,
they just recycled the ball. Like, maybe in a game where it's so tight and Arsenal was so happy to sit back,
the
difference is a little bit of trickery and you win that penalty.
100%. I saw someone tweet that. I think he's Umir. He tweeted that. He's like, Man City don't have enough players anymore in that squad that go directly at a player and win a pen.
No. All four of the players I listed do that. Pep just doesn't want them to do it.
Yeah, that's true. Because then people were... So he captioned it saying, Sterling has won the most penalties for Man City ever. Mm. And so they've not got Sterling anymore. And Mahrez was a player in that ilk as well that won penalties.
You're telling me that Jack Grealish, Jeremy Doku and Phil Foden and Bernardo Silva are not capable of beating a man?
Nah, not anymore. I think that's killed off. But anyway, Anthony Gordon, on the other hand,
just
what a guy.
He's so good. Him...
Yeah, I've done a full 180 on him. I think he's so good.
Yeah, Harvey Barnes when he came on.
Yeah.
Different gravy.
We'll touch on Harvey Barnes. But let's touch on that last penalty because Calvin Phillips obviously got an absolutely rinsed on the timeline.
All right, let's go through this chronologically, yeah?
Okay.
So, Newcastle go 1-0 up. Alexander Isak. Then, not too long afterwards...
It's 3-1 West Ham by the end of it.
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, you saw Antonio. He was a problem for the Newcastle defence. We saw Jamal Lascelles go off injured. They brought on Emil Kraft. They had a whole shift of their back line. I think they moved Kraft. So, Kraft went to right back. Then Dan Byrne went to
left
centre back.
And Tino went across.
And, yeah, so they moved literally their entire back four across.
And you could tell.
And another ACL injury for Newcastle, which is beginning to ask a lot of questions. Because you look back at Eddie Howe's time at Bournemouth, there's a point where I think Max Gradel, Callum Wilson and someone else were all out with ACL injuries.
Has he not mastered the art of rotating and managing a squad?
I don't know, but it's questionable because not... There's something going on, whether it's in the physio room or on the training ground. Maybe training's too intense.
Mm.
But there's a lot of injuries. And at some point, you have to question whether it's just bad luck or is there something that we're doing wrong?
Yeah.
But yeah.
I agree. I think it's a lack of squad depth coupled with kind of like an over-aggressive style of play.
But yeah, anyway, Lascelles goes off injured and 4 minutes later, Pakatov finds Antonio with a lovely ball. Pakatov is unbelievable.
Yeah.
And then Antonio puts it away. Then there's a short free kick, quick free kick taken when Fabian Schär's down on the floor holding his face. And Mohamed Kudus puts that away.
Runs over to the ball boy, asks for his stall. And the ball boy says no.
Yeah.
Love that from the ball boy.
Half time, we saw Areola got off injured at half time and Fabianski came on. And then within about 2 minutes, Jarrod Bowen put West Ham 3-1 up.
And at this point, West Ham are flying. And I want to talk about...
Newcastle were just getting slated. Everyone was just saying they've fallen apart. They've got this makeshift back four there.
Mm.
I mean...
Well, I think these two are kind of, in my mind, when I was watching this game, I thought these two were kind of like an eerily similar kind of team. Where, defensively, both frail as fuck. And that could be injuries, that could just be not having good enough defenders.
Also, how is Vladimir Kufal still West Ham's right back?
Yeah, mental.
He is shocking.
And then going forward, both these teams are like European level players.
Mm.
Like West Ham, you've got Pakatar, Kudus,
Bowen,
who all three of them could get Champions League moves.
Mm-hmm.
And then Newcastle, you've got Isak, Gordon, Harvey Barnes, Bruno Guimaraes, all of those could get Champions mm-hmm. League moves. So going forward, both these teams are really good. So it was always going to be a banger. And defensively, both of them are frail as fuck. So it was always going to be goals, goals, goals. And so you see that in this game where the attacks just are a different level to the defences.
Yeah, going forward, both teams looked really good. But we saw Eddie Howe make some brave substitutions. He brought on Almiron, Anderson,
Lewis
Hall.
Took Almiron off because he got injured.
Well, yeah, he took off Emil Kraft as well, who he only brought on for Lascelles. So you ended up with Almiron coming on, Anderson, Hall, and then Barnes coming on for Almiron again. Then the man of the moment comes. The main man. All eyes on him. Calvin Phillips comes on to consolidate what was a pretty comfortable 3-1 win for West Ham. What was it, 20 minutes left on the clock? I think it's about 6-7 minutes later. Penalty. In my opinion, quite harsh.
So harsh. In my opinion, it's not a pen.
I think...
Like I said earlier, is there a better player at getting his leg in where he shouldn't get his leg in?
Subjectivity in football needs to be a thing. And they call for it a lot. Because decisions can't always be made. They're not always black and white. But Calvin Phillips is clearing the ball.
Yeah.
He's facing away from Anthony Gordon. He's made only an attempt to play the ball. Anthony Gordon has come from behind, hooked his leg around Calvin Phillips, and caused the contact.
Yeah. My issue with it is that the VAR, when he's sent over to screen, they only show like a half a second.
The contact.
Of, yeah, Gordon getting his leg in front and Calvin Phillips hitting him. They don't show kind of like the build-up with Calvin Phillips on the ball. That would give the referee context that Calvin Phillips has the ball.
If Calvin Phillips...
Without that context, it looks like a pen.
If Calvin Phillips is moving with that ball, then it's a free kick to West Ham.
Yeah, 100%.
Because Anthony Gordon's not touched the ball. So for me, it's a strange one. But we see...
Calvin Phillips is on the most horrid run of form.
You do feel for him.
I do feel for him because...
Because he's also been... He was going to go to Juve. And then Gareth Southgate told him he had to go to West Ham.
And it was brave to leave Man City and try and get first team football. But it has just gone absolutely pear-shaped.
Yeah, I do feel for him.
Did you see him swear at the fans?
Oh, did he?
Yeah, he was getting on the bus. And I don't know, he was getting jeered.
I feel bad for him, mate.
Because
he's actually a decent player somewhere in there. Mm. I never thought he was elite.
No.
But he did something different. He's like a little terrier on the pitch. It was
nice. He puts himself about, but at the moment he's putting himself about with no calmness. He's just running around like a headless chicken.
He's just got chaos within him at the minute and it just needs to... But yeah,
anyway.
Isak comes and slots his second penalty away against a different keeper. Then Anthony Gordon gets a first yellow card. Harvey Barnes.
Barnstorming is what Martin Keown labelled it as. I just think it's so... Obviously, they've got hella injuries, Newcastle. We spoke about that. Getting him back is massive because I think he is so good.
He is. His output is so unbelievably good.
Yeah, so consistent. Such a good goal scorer. And I think with him and Anthony Gordon in the team, I think obviously Almiron's injured now, but Almiron had that purple patch which got everybody talking. He is bang average.
Yep.
And I think, having Barnes and Gordon is so solid either side of Isak. And so, so good to have him back. And
but
two
last-minute
goals.
Yeah, surely your main front three is Isak, Gordon and Barnes.
Yeah, 100%.
I don't see another way. And once Newcastle get back to a full strength side, they get Joelinton back in the middle. They've got maybe Tonali if he ever comes back from this horrendous betting.
And it's bad as well. It's got worse.
But if they get him, with a free of Tonali, Guimaraes and Joelinton is good.
They're just plagued with injuries. And like we said, is it bad luck or is it a systemic squad issue?
Yep.
But Harvey Barnes comes on, two goals in the 80th and 90th minute. Excellent finishes as well. I think, that's what we said. His output is so good. His finishing is so good. And then the game ended with an Anthony Gordon red card.
Yeah, so he's going to miss Newcastle's next fixture.
But, I think it's...
Do you know what was weird as well? There was a game where Newcastle came back and I think won 4-3 against Leicester. And Alan Shearer scored a hat-trick. And scored at and the goals that were scored against West Ham were scored at the exact same time that he scored his. 77th, 80-something, and 90th minute.
That's magical.
Yeah, that's crazy, right? The more you know.
You're talking about... Yeah, no, that's mad. Yeah, so I think West Ham and Newcastle, both an interesting team. Both could look at each other and think we're pretty similar. Because defensively, they are leaking goals. Newcastle, last season, I think we were one of the best teams defensively in the league. This season, absolute shambles. And West Ham, similar. Just too good going forward, terrible defensively.
Let's just talk about a team that are just terrible all over the pitch.
Love it.
Manchester United. So, we watched this at the pub. We found it very, very boring. I mean, just horrendous to watch.
Man United are the worst team to watch in the Premier League.
Brentford aren't far behind them, but you'd expect Man United to play better football.
Like you keep saying, I think Brentford are a good team, but like you keep saying, they're in a relegation battle.
Yeah.
So they're not as scary as they have been the last couple of seasons.
I mean, had it not been for various point deductions, they would be in a severe relegation battle.
Yeah, true.
But fortunately... they've run their club quite well, so they're not being put in with that pack. But I mean, it's still they're still down there. They've still seen they've gone backwards rather than progressing forwards. I know they had the difficulty of traversing Ivan Toney's ban, but regardless, it's just I don't know. They're not great. They've had a lot of injuries. I mean, Rico Henry's Aaron Hickey as well. I don't know. They're just poor. And then, so Manchester United, Mason Mount, 40, nabbed it at the end. 90 plus 6 minutes. Didn't Man United just completely fall apart, just get absolutely brutalised? They just get walked through. Lisandro Martinez gets spun. And then suddenly Crystal Byers put it in the back of your net.
We said a couple of weeks ago, Man United, I think it was against Wolves, I can't remember who it was, their like game management is so bad. And I think I specifically said it comes as a result of having zero actual leaders on the pitch.
Oh, mate. When Bruno Fernandes is like your go-to guy, you're in deep shit.
Yeah, 100%. It's just the lack of leaders. If you score a 96th minute goal to make it 1-0, there is no way in a million years you should be conceded a 99th minute goal.
I'm not being funny yet.
It's embarrassing.
Like, at some point, you have to just be brave. And Ten Hag, in his tenure there, has been brave. He basically forced Ronaldo out of the club. That was one of the big things he'd done. Marcus Rashford, is he actually bringing anything? Or is he just wasting time?
I said when we did our Man United squad
overhaul video
back probably about the start of the season, 6 months ago, I said get rid of him for
He's
money.
He's got to go, mate.
I think PSG are dumb enough to do 80 mil for him.
Oh, mate, if you and get 60 mil for him.
100%. I think... Garnacho, play him in his favourite position. Play him left wing. Yeah. Even though he's putting in a shift at right wing, I really like Garnacho. Play him left wing, get a mad in at right wing, and just bin off Rashford. He is more hassle than he's worth.
They need to turn to the boys.
Yeah, 100%.
A mad Diallo, I think he could do more than a job. Garnacho, 100%. Maybe even bin off Bruno, mate.
It's scary because obviously then you're talking about
that's a complete overhaul.
Changing the entire fabric of a team. And that's what Arteta did at Arsenal.
But sometimes you have to do that. I mean, look at this club. It is so toxic through to its core. You haven't seen success for like since Sir Alex left, mate. And it's not going to get better unless it gets worse.
And
you
I see people say, whose fault is it? Is it the ownership? The ownership's changed now. And they look to be making smart moves. So maybe that'll help. But is it the player's fault? Is it Ten Hag's fault? And for me, I think it's Ten Hag. I think he's getting away with murder, you know.
Jadon Sancho's gone to the Bundesliga and absolutely tore up.
Let's talk about why he's getting away with murder. Man United, in this game, against relegation battling Brentford, conceded 31 shots. 31 shots. That's bad. But I'll give you another stat. Only three teams in the Premier League have conceded more shots than Man United, and two of them in the relegation zone. So Man United, in terms of shots conceded, are battling relegation.
It's so poor. I mean...
And that comes from a lack of bravery.
Ten Hag said that he wants the Man United to become the best transitional team in the world. Almost the best counter-attacking team in the world.
That goes directly against pretty much everything Man United stands for.
So, I mean, like, I get it if you were, like, Brighton or someone like that. Brighton, who constantly trying to take on the big boys, they play their way. Transitional football's fine. Yeah. But you've got this style of play where you want to build up out through the back.
Well, that's why you brought Onana.
He's bought Onana.
He's brought Martinez
in for that. He's got Eriksen.
You've got Kobbie Mainoo, who that is his main trait.
So you want to do that, but then you want to be the best transitional team in the world, and they're two counter-opposing styles of play. So either you transition quickly or you build up. There's one or the other. You don't really do
both at all, no. And you're not doing either of them very well.
And
at
he's
the moment.
Got no one in the middle of the pitch who's able to distribute the ball quickly like that. Because, common minded, for all he's great at, we haven't seen him pick the ball up and then ping like 30, 40
yard
passes.
You need like a Steven Gerrard or a Xabi Alonso.
Yeah,
kind
mate,
of 100%
player. A Pirlo.
Yeah, just a diagonal masterclass. But you've got no one that does that.
But yeah, it's, I don't know, it's so poor. And they sort of traversed the beginning of the season where it was all Onana making mistakes, Harry Maguire making mistakes.
Onana's actually come in and looked pretty decent.
He's actually a very good shot stopper.
He's growing into his role. But the rest of the team, and I think it's not even the players anymore. I've said it. I think it's Ten Hag, and
he's
like
just a waste, man.
He has just like no bravery. You see him in the post match. He said, "So you've just conceded a 99th minute goal to draw 1-1 against Brentford, and you've got him. You've got your manager saying, oh, Man City were lucky to get a result there. Arsenal were lucky to get a result there. So we'll take a 1-1. We shouldn't be too disheartened, mate. You were 1-0 up in the 96th minute
against the odds."
And you conceded 31 shots. Like,
I mean, maybe he's not wrong. Maybe he say maybe the likeness to Arsenal, Man City, a poor choice of word. But maybe he should be thinking, "Wow, we're lucky to get a 1-0 out of this because really we should have lost 1-0."
Yeah, or about 31-0.
Because yeah, it's poor. I mean, how are you going to the G Spot Arena and conceding 31 shots
it's
against
so
Brentford?
Bad, yeah,
it's so poor. It's so so poor. I mean, you've got these big name players in your team here: Bruno Fernandes, Marcus Rashford, and you get played off the park by bloody Yanel, mate.
Literally, yeah.
It's ridiculous. Yeah, it's so, so poor. Take a long, hard look at yourself, yeah, because you are so far from the Man United team.
Out of your depth. And
oh my god,
bloody
Mourinho's United were better.
100. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's Man United were better.
They had fight in them. This Man United team are weak. They've got the softest underbelly in the Premier League.
Mate, it's
anything
so bad.
Anytime it goes a little bit wrong, it just falls apart.
Yeah.
And they've got to have a massive overhaul in the summer. I don't even know if they've got money to move about in terms of financial fair play. But they're going to have to get rid of Rashford. You get 60 million for Rashford. You get 60 million for Fernandes.
Yep.
You'd be lucky.
100. And then you build around Højlund. I like him. Garnacho, Kobbie-Mainoo, Ahmad. Like them.
Palistri.
Yeah, there's good young talent.
100%.
Just get rid of all the top... and I don't want to keep liking it. It's
Eriksen's
Arsenal.
Got to go. Casemiro's got to go.
You've got too many big earners that aren't pulling their weight. Like Arsenal did. Be brave. I don't know if Ten Hag's that guy. Maybe the new ownerships are those guys.
Well, let's probably just do this then, yeah? And we'll do a keep or sell.
Man United fans, get in the comments as well.
Right. Onana.
Keep.
Keep, 100%. Right back, Diego Dalo.
I really like him. He's grown into this by... Yeah, nah, keep. Fuck it.
Wan-Bissaka? Sell?
Get rid of
him. Yeah, I think, yeah.
You get 30 mil for him.
Yeah, 30 mil, probably goes back to Palace.
Yeah.
And then, get a nice, young, cheap right back in. Play a little bit of depth.
100.
Centre backs, let's go Lisandro Martinez.
Keep.
Harry Maguire.
Get rid of him.
Johnny Evans is retiring, I believe, at the end of the
season. Just let him stay, yeah.
Who else has he got? Lindelof?
Lindelof, get rid of him. Been there too long. Varane, get rid of him.
Varane, definitely get rid. And then left back, Luke Shaw.
Get rid of him.
Too injury prone. What's happened to Malacia?
We'll talk about Chelsea in a bit, maybe. But I saw there's news coming out of Chelsea that they're looking to get rid of Reece James. And that is...
Reece James and
Conor Gallagher.
Conor Gallagher,
yeah. It's the best ability is availability, big man.
Oh, 100%. Casemiro.
Gone, mate.
Eriksen.
Gone.
Scott McTominay.
That's going to split the fan base. I think you've got to keep him. Such a good plan B player.
Oh, yeah, but, I mean, he's
not even plan A player.
Yeah. Kobbie-Mainoo, obvious keep. Bruno Fernandes.
He's got to go. Or at least, at a minimum, and I don't know how you facilitate this, take away his captaincy.
Yeah.
Get in a big man. I don't know who that guy is. That's his head screwed on. He's a leader of men. And make him the captain.
And he's got a whiny little bitch.
If you can keep Bruno Fernandes and take away his captaincy, fair enough, but I don't know how you do that. I think you've got to sell him.
Is Martial still at the club?
Yeah, bin him off.
Yeah, he can go. Mason Mount.
Keep.
Yep. Garnacho.
Keep.
Anthony.
Gone. He's had a couple of good cameos, but that is because he's only playing for like 5 minutes.
Interesting one. Jadon Sancho.
Gone.
Okay. I think for me, it's quite simple.
And then Højlund keep what?
It's quite simple. You start building around this Højlund, Garnacho, maybe Diallo frontline, or you get someone else in.
Just back the youngsters.
Yeah, 100%. Midfield, Kobbie Mainoo, build around him.
Get Kobbie Mainoo a partner that's in his prime right now.
Yeah, experience.
Maybe even, I don't know how you facilitate this, Joshua Kimmich.
Yeah.
I like that move.
Yeah, it's not bad.
Those two is a base midfield and Scott McTominay on top of them.
Is that tasty? I find it difficult to see why anyone would go to Man United.
Yeah, Man United's problem is they're not appealing at all.
No, 100%. And they've got to sell it somehow. But
and Kimmich, actually, I think he excluded Man United. I think he excluded Man United. I think he's only looking at Arsenal, Liverpool, Man City, and Real Madrid.
Real Madrid, yeah.
So, but I don't know. If you get someone in that ilk that's in their prime, that's been about, a leader of men.
Yeah, I think, yeah. And maybe look at someone like Motegi or Anderson. And then,
yeah, just, yeah.
And then, yeah, they've just got to be smarter. Mm. And they've gone for this scattergun approach before where they've gone out and bought loads of semi-decent players and none of them really worked. I mean, the only one I can still remember that's in the squad is now Diogo Dalot.
Yeah, well, they've hired the recruitment guy from Crystal Palace, yeah. So maybe they've got smarter moves incoming.
Yeah, I don't know.
And obviously, his Crystal Palace links, you could get Anderson or Gueye or maybe Elise.
Or Doucouré.
Yeah, so there's moves there, like you said.
Man United now is just a breeding ground for death. I mean, you go there and your career just dies off.
Yeah, and that's why it's probably hard to attract a player that I'm talking about that's in his prime, that's on top of the world. Yeah,
you've got to sell this as the rebuild, and maybe give it to someone. Maybe they even go for someone who's just a bit on in years. And
I was going to say maybe Toni Kroos.
But then again, they've got Varane and Casemiro.
That's literally could just end up exactly like that. I mean, but I don't know.
I think
it's got to be young. Yeah, Kimmich is my shout, but I don't know how they make that happen.
Yeah, it's so difficult, isn't it? But something has to change because you can't be drawing 1-1 at Brentford. And
it'll be interesting to see when summer comes around if Ten Hag is still in the job. Man United fans, let us know. Do you keep Ten Hag? What place would he have to finish? And does a place finish in the table even matter? If I finish fifth, which actually probably gets you Champions League football, do you keep him? Or does a place finish not even matter anymore? Is he too out of his depth no matter what place he gets? Let us know.
Yeah, it's rough, isn't it? It's tough. Tough times never last.
Only tough people last.
Yeah.
One more team that I want to talk about is Chelsea. Mauricio Pochettino, in the build-up to the Burnley game, said all the stats are saying Chelsea should be fourth in the Premier League.
I don't know what stats
all the stats.
At.
So it's only unlucky that we're not fourth in the league. Brother,
mate.
You're the bottom half of the... You have to scroll down to see Chelsea.
Mate, you spent £1 billion, mate, and you're bottom half of the table.
It's so bad. And you'd think, after saying that, him and his boys would rally around and get an absolutely big result against Burnley.
10-man Burnley.
To kind of show, maybe we're not...
We're not as bad as everyone thinks we
are. Yeah. Big man, they played 10-man Burnley and drew 2-2.
You're so poor. Mate. And they were fortunate as well because Cole Palmer's penalty shouldn't have been a penalty.
I said this to you in the pub. Is there, and I'll post this to all the fans of the Boardwalk Podcast, shout out. Is there a more one-player team in the Premier League right now than Chelsea and Cole Palmer? I can't think of any. I've genuinely not seen a team be carried by one player like this in a very long time.
He's so poor.
And
I love it because who doesn't like to see Chelsea...
In the mud.
Absolutely binning it off. But, mate, they're just so poor, aren't they? And when you've got a manager who's just waffling... What stats are you looking at? Let's say you should be fourth at the table. What stats? Give me specifics.
Yeah, give me facts. Give me receipts.
Are you looking at expected goals for, expected goals against?
Yeah, I don't know.
Chances created. Because I don't see it on the pitch.
Chelsea are such a weird one.
But then
one.
Again, I think their XG against Burnley was 4.4 or something.
So there is a clear lack of final third ability. Sterling missed a couple of sitters.
But how can you spend £1 billion and still not found someone who could put it in the back of the net?
Well, do you see there's news that apparently they're binning off Todd Bowley as the chairman.
Well, yeah, so they've got a five-year cycle where they can vetoed out the chairman.
Yeah.
So
but they got wait till 27
for 2 years. Yeah, 3 years. So,
but yeah, like you said, their XG was like 4 in this game. So there's clear lack of final third ability.
But then again, so like you
can't be drawing 2-2 against 10-man Burnley.
You spoke about this earlier. You mentioned how they're going to be potentially selling off Reece James and Conor Gallagher to try and make some room to manoeuvre. Yeah. Not even to manoeuvre, to avoid a financial fair play penalty. Who's going to pay you $50 million for Reece James? Who's going to be
I see people still say he is the best right back in world football.
Yeah, but he's played like 20 games in like 4 seasons.
Yeah, 10 games a season, and it's not good enough.
And if it's not like he came back and played a lot of games and then got injured again. He has played like 2 games injury.
Perennial
2 games injury.
I got heaters when I said I'd rather Ben White in my squad than Reece James.
Mate, I'd rather like Diego Dalot than Reece James.
You can't get round a bad injury record. And when you're playing 10 games a season and you're the club captain, you're in a mess.
He is an excellent football player and maybe the most complete right back in football. But he's not a complete human being because his bones are in bits.
Brother, I've been through it. Jack Wilshere was the guy. But when your body can't keep up with the vigours of modern day football.
Mate, you've got to play 60 games a season and you can't even complete 8.
Yeah, it's mad.
That's an issue.
Yeah,
I mean, he's not even young anymore.
No,
I don't know. The world is moving on, and Reece James might be a thing of the past. And it's sad to see because he's such a good footballer.
And I like Malo Gusto. So
yeah,
it's not a case of they're losing a player and they have no replacement anywhere. Malo Gusto is good.
He's an excellent player.
So maybe it is time to cash in on Reece James. But like you said, who's buying him?
Conor Gallagher. Yeah. Let's be real. I wouldn't pay more than like $40 million for him.
No, I think he's a good $40 million max.
He ticks a box for the homegrown player. He's trained in the country.
He works hard.
English tax, so he's going to be worth a little bit more. But he's not a game winning.
No,
player,
he's not a match winner. He's not a X factor player.
And like, so he wouldn't go. So I can't see Arsenal, Liverpool, Man City, none of them going to be interested.
There was links with Tottenham, wasn't there?
Man United, maybe?
Man United, I think. I don't know what he offers. Is him and Kobamanu a good midfield? I don't hate it.
I just feel like.
But, yeah, Spurs, I think, is a reasonable move. But I think even Spurs' project's a little bit ahead of Conor Gallagher.
Bissouma, yeah? And then you have Bissouma,
Bentancourt,
and Maddison.
Yeah, I think their project is a little bit ahead of Conor Gallagher. Does he move to, is it a mental, West Ham? Like a Brighton or a West Ham?
West Ham, maybe. But then again, if he wants to play that number 10, he's not a number 10.
No. Chelsea.
Villa.
Mad. Should we quickly touch on Burnley? Let's touch on Burnley. That's an absolutely banging result. What one of Burnley?
Burnley, I've seen a lot of traction on the timeline of them doing the Great Escape.
Well, they've binned off James Trafford, brought in, is it Muric?
Yep.
And he looks good. And they brought Cullen in as well. He looks good.
Yep.
Maybe the Great Escape is on. I think it's brave from company to bin off Trafford, especially like getting an England call-up is a bit mental.
Yeah.
I think Trafford's been pretty bang average most of the season. So I think...
Oh, I don't know, mate.
But I think... I just don't think I can see them getting enough results.
Oh, do you know what? It just... So the bottom three shapes up like this. Actually, I'm going to give you the bottom seven.
Fucking hell, lad.
Sheffield United, 15 points.
Got an all right result against Fulham, 3-3.
Game in hand, though.
Yeah.
Probably not going to win it. No. Burnley, 18 points. Luton on 22. Bear in mind, though, Sheffield United, minus 50 goal difference.
They're
Burnley,
done out.
Burnley, minus 34.
They're done out.
Okay?
Yeah.
Luton, minus 19. Luton point on good, points with Nottingham Forest, obviously had a point deduction, but 3 goals behind. And then Everton are on 25 points with a game in hand, 11 goal difference. So if Everton win their game in hand, they go above Brentford, who sit on 27 points. That means Luton would need to basically better Forest result over the coming...
Which I can see.
100%.
Luton
and Luton were unlucky
against Spurs, yeah.
I can't see it for Burnley, mate.
Nah.
I'm not entirely sure of their running, but I can't imagine. I mean, I don't see who they beat.
Yeah,
maybe they can get a result against someone like Bournemouth or Palace. Maybe not even Brentford. I think Brentford shut up shop against them.
Yeah,
maybe Forest.
For me, Burnley, I like the kind of reinvention
the
and kind
to
of
stick with your manager is
bravery
good as well.
And kind of indecent form. But like you said, I can't see them getting enough results.
And I just even I look at so Sheffield United go down next this season, Burnley go down this season. I think that there are better clubs in the Championship. I actually genuinely do. I mean, you look at if so if
it's
Leicester
Leeds,
don't go up, if well if one of Leicester it's two of Leicester, Leeds, Ipswich, and Southampton, one of the two of them won't go up, or maybe one of them won't go up. But yeah, it's going to be interesting. It's going to be, oh, I don't know, it's going to be so good.
Guys, let us know who you're so excited good. For in the running. Who do you think is going to get relegated?
Who's going to win the title?
Who's going to win the title? Oh, Man United, are they going to stick with Ten Hag? Chelsea are going to stick with Pochettino? There's so many questions. We're not going to answer them.
I just want to know. But we've just got to enjoy it. We've got midweek football again.
So we'll be
we've
back
got Champions
on your
League
soon.
Following week, I believe. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's all kicking off. The business end of the season's here. And then it's not even over there. Then we got the Euros.
We're going to be slapping so much content. So tell your mums, tell your nans, tell your daughters and your dogs all about Ball Draw Podcast, because we've got hella content. If you want to cop yourself some cheap football garms, head over to Classic Football Shirts.
Yes.
Use our referral link in the description.
Down below.
Ball Draw 10 to get 10% off. We'll get a little kickback, which is bloody lovely.
It all goes back in to regenerating the studio.
Yeah, come on. New studio, season 3, coming soon.
100%. Thank you very much for watching, guys. It's been Ball Draw, episode number 91. And it's live.